And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith. Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
I want to welcome all my friends to this week's Wild Side News from across the United States and around the world. We have listeners in the Netherlands, Chile, Japan, and Norway. I want to encourage you to just keep on coming back because we're creating quite an amazing family. And it's great to share this every week with you. This is a thrill for me. Well, you know, it's May. And spring is definitely in the air. You can feel it. Passions are rising, colors are brightening, the days are getting longer, and it feels as if something is changing. Thank God for the renewals. They somehow encourage us to dig a little deeper into life, to look at what has gone before, and to think about the future. All around the world, people are planting, investing, and hoping for a bountiful, healthy tomorrow. Today, we're going to dig a little deeper. We start the show with the news, as always. Then I'm going to grab all of you and get you started in taking notes from the field. Call it sketching, call it journaling. It's a great addition to life, and it also is a lot of fun. Today I'll help you get started in sketching and journaling. Then in our second segment, we're heading out to a secluded wash somewhere in South Dakota, where you'll become part of an ongoing excavation of one of the lost great creatures, part of life's ancestry, of a newly discovered Tyrannosaurus rex. A crew has been in the field and created an amazing online unearthing. I'm addicted. I'm involved. Every morning I get up, I want to see what's happened in the last day. I want to watch this, and I know you will too. And then we dig again in the third segment into the Wildlife University, an online series of courses that can help to get lots of us up to speed on real-life wildlife and habitat techniques. You know what? Every one of us needs to know these things. And here is the kicker. You can attend this online university for free. So, it's a great show here on WS Radio. By the way, I want to thank you for tuning in. The Wild Side News is taking form thanks to you. The number of listeners doubles every single show. I love the stats, so thanks. Let's just keep on doubling this. Tell your friends to tune in. This is getting to be a lot of fun. And as we move on, I want to encourage you to tell your friends about the Wild Side News and let me know that you're listening. I'm getting emails from all over the country, so thanks. Send me an email. Let me know you're here. By the way, I want you to know that next week we'll have an amazing show that will demonstrate and celebrate the great strides that are happening as activists become partners and CEOs become spokespeople for a healthy future. It's a show I want you all to tune in on. And then 2 weeks from now, we'll be celebrating National Trails Day in partnership with the American Hiking Society. National Trails Day is June 5th, and we want to get everyone geared up for that weekend. So let's start digging. Let's start with the news. Three stories from Norway. Nobody said wildlife management was easy. A female polar bear and her two cubs have become stranded on Bear Island, which is part of the nation of Norway after an unusually fast ice melt. The dilemma is causing a complex array of responses. A debate is raging between those who want the government to launch a rescue and those who think otherwise. In a unique twist, Norwegian environmental organizations are urging to let nature take its course. The animals without rescue will perish on the island. The government is agreeing with the environmentalists and refusing to launch a rescue. The public, on the other hand, favors government to intervene by a margin of 5-1. 80% of those polled were in favor of actions to save the bears. Norway again makes the news as their parliament voted Tuesday for a threefold increase in whale hunting quotas on the minke whales, which are being fingered as the main threat to the Norwegian cod fishing industry. "We want to increase quotas considerably as soon as possible," said Fisheries Minister Svein Ludvigsen. The World Wildlife Federation claimed that Norway is blaming whales for its own overfishing. "The problem with Norwegian fisheries is overharvesting by fishermen. To kill more marine mammals, to camouflage, that is a very bad idea," so says Rasmus Hansen, the World Wildlife Federation Secretary General in Norway. The vote in the Norwegian parliament to increase the whaling quotas was by unanimous decision. And from Norway. Norway opened its annual whale hunt with criticism from various fronts. Norway is the only country that still permits commercial whaling using harpoons tipped with grenades, which are meant to deliver a fatal shock to the marine animals. The World Society for the Protection of Animals reported that despite its destructive power, the harpoon often fails to kill the animal outright, causing a prolonged death. However, Rune Frovik, spokesman for the High North Alliance, a pro-whaling group, said, "A whale does not realize what is going on. It does not know it is being hunted, and when harpooned, will die instantly. I encourage my friends listening in Norway to invite Mr. Frovik to listen to last week's talk with Dave Ball, who was a guest here on the Wild Side News, about an animal's capacity to know what is going on. Gorillas, orangutans, chimpanzees, and bonobos in Iowa are asking for help from the area's fire departments. They are in desperate need of old fire hoses for use as swings and hammocks that will be used in the new Iowa Primate Learning Sanctuary. The hoses must be at least 10 feet long and rubber-lined with cotton jacket. The Iowa Primate Center will be one of the largest ape facilities in North America and one of the first to include all four types of great apes. The center is dedicated to providing sanctuary and an honorable life for the great apes, studying their intelligence and advancing conservation of great apes far beyond Iowa. For more information, go to iowagreatapes.org. The term mass extinction is becoming more familiar these days, as it is used to describe the possible course of the Earth's existing species and as it has been applied to describing the sudden disappearance of more than 90% of the species on Earth in ancient times. Recent analysis of core samples from oil drilling off the northwest coast of Australia shows evidence of a large meteor impact that would have occurred about 250 million years ago and predating the end of the dinosaurs that occurred about 65 million years ago, attributed to another massive meteor. Scientists refer to these catastrophic moments as the Great Dying. Such were a mystery until research pointed to massive earthly shocks, such as giant meteor impacts and massive volcanic eruptions, which blocked the sun with ash and smoke for many years. However, more research is needed before this new crater is verified. Scientists recently determined that extinction of a single species can have wide-ranging and unpredictable results on the surviving populations of plants and animals. The initial response to the disappearance of a prime predator will be the increase in prey species. However, through time, these populations diminish, perhaps due to the loss of culling of weakened species by predators, thus creating a generally less adaptive population. The researchers from the University of Wisconsin-Madison therefore urge a wider view towards conservation, emphasis by conservation programs on the charismatic animals such as tigers and gorillas, although absolutely well-intentioned, and an important first step must as well include the less cuddly creatures, as nearly every organism lives in a complex, interacting web of species. It's had enough to try to predict, it's hard enough to try to predict how species are interacting with one another. To then ask when species go extinct what will be the effect, it's almost impossible. Unpredictability is the reason conservationists should operate at the ecosystem level rather than the species. We can't just go out and conserve one species, said Bradley Cardinale, one of the researchers. We would be prudent to conserve as many as we can. And Greenpeace has been cleared of all charges of sailor mongering, a charge brought against them by government agencies following their attempt to hang a sign on a ship transporting illegally got mahogany from Brazilian forests and on its way to a port in Miami. The Justice Department filed criminal charges of sailor mongering against the two Greenpeace activists for peaceably boarding ship to hang a sign protesting illegal logging. The obscure charge dates back to an 1872 law protecting sailors from being lured into inns and pubs. No charges were pressed against the ship for its attempting to bring the illegal woods into the U.S. The Sierra Club this week endorsed Kerry for president. And that's the news. So let's talk about sketching and work and journaling. You know, one thing I know for sure is that every single one of us started out drawing. We love to draw. We seem to be drawn to it. And certainly in the field, drawing and taking notes has a long history of noted journals of discovery. It's one of the great ways to add color and meaning to our lives. It's personal. It helps us define what is important to us. Journaling has reemerged. Some people suggest that it even has therapeutic values. Well, I suppose it certainly can. But bottom line, it's just a great thing to do. Now, I've been doing sketchbooks for over 30 years, and I have a stack 4 feet tall. They've served me well. I have another side, besides being a radio talk show host, and that is I'm a pretty serious artist. I have a link to my other side here on the Wild Side News. You can click on wildsmith.com and see my paintings, landscapes, and drawings. And so here's what we're going to do. I want you to go to today's website, webpage, and I want you to click on any of the images that suggest the field sketching and journaling, and that will take you to a special page where I have outlined and I have images of the things that you'll need, and I want to give you a brief introduction to field sketching and journals. So please do that. Go to the page, and if you're listening live and you can't do this, tune in on the archives, and you'll be able to do this at your convenience. So if you can, go to the page, and you should see field sketches and journaling in a series of images. Well, let's start talking about some basics that can get you started in sketching and journaling. And I'm going to, in the future, give you in-depth courses in how to draw and do watercolors and things, but we'll start here. Anyway, all that you really need to get started, number one is basics. You need a sketchbook, a pencil, and some kind of a sharpener. With that, if you just take that out into the field, you can have an incredible amount of pleasure just sitting down and sketching, and when you get thoughts, you know, write them down. Another thing that's a really great thing to have is some sort of permanent drawing ink, or sometimes those little Sharpie fine line markers work great. The reason being that they're permanent, and therefore when you wash over them, for example, with watercolor or water, they stay put and they don't bleed. You're also going to need a good pencil. Now, my favorite is the Eberhard Faber Design Ebony. It's pictured there on the page. And you can go to any good art supply store, and they'll have these. Are typically 50 cents or a dollar. So there you have it. With a sketchbook and that pencil and some kind of a sharpener, you'll be able to head on out. Now, one of the things that you'll want to do as you start doing field sketching in journals through time is to add color and, of course, other details and features. So some of the things that you'll need, perhaps, are some colored pencils. I certainly recommend getting yourself a good brush. And the one that I do like to recommend, and I have no interest in the company, is the Grumbacher Number 6. Okay, it's a wonderful red sable brush, and a brush is extremely important. Also, the Sharpie permanent markers or some sort of fun other kinds of pens are terrific. Another thing that some of you will want is to add color. And so I suggest that you go out and get yourself a small watercolor set. These are available, again, at different art supply stores. I have one pictured there. I like the small ones because they fit into a pocket. And, of course, then you'll also need a little bit of water, so make sure you have some sort of a container that you can take the water. Now, the next image that I have is of a table of contents. I like, in my sketchbook, to reserve some of the front pages for oftentimes a title page, and then also a table of contents. And I have a lot of fun with that. I just kind of draw in, put in my own lettering, and I leave it kind of blank because who knows what you're going to discover. As you do your journaling, You has a page here where I'm showing you some of the varieties, the writing. There's a watercolor of a tree, and also I sometimes embellish these with images that I take from magazines and other things, because it's your book and you can do what you want. Number 8, by the way, is from one of my field sketchbooks, and it's a picture of a glacier lily. It shows an image done with a sketch pencil, actually my design, ebony. That was done in Yellowstone National Park. The next image, number 9, is a cloud study. That shows you a little bit of what you can do when you use watercolors. I have a fascination with drawing of flowers, so image number 10 is a wildflower sketch, and it's actually a prairie rose is what it is. And you can see I just have fun with that. You don't have to be real detailed, but it works. I also, number 11 is a wildflower sketch of the shooting star. So this gives you some ideas of some of the things that you can do. And in the future, by the way, we're going to be talking about thumbnail sketches. These are a really great way to get in and very quickly capture the sense of place. And so in our next segment, when we talk again about sketching and journaling, I'm going to focus on the thumbnail sketch. Next image is a pencil sketch of the Yellowstone River. I did that when I was artist in residence out in Yellowstone Park, and it gives you an idea of the way you can just take a portion of the page, and I've turned my sketchbook around a little bit there. I like actually the ones with the spring binder, because then you can fold it completely back. And then sometimes you just want to take a detail of tree forms, which you can see in number 14. And it goes on. I encourage you to get a sketchbook, get some pencils, head out into the wonder, and take your notes and have some fun. So when we return, we're going to be digging deeper again into the mysteries of the ancient forms here on the Wild Side News.